Hi, welcome to the Education Business Success Podcast. My name is Esther Godor. I'm your host on this podcast, and I'm also the creator of the JUMP program to help after-school academy owners and kids activity providers to leave the overwhelm of doing everything by themselves behind, to get paid what they are worth, and to touch hundreds and thousands of students' lives while living their best life. So if you are an academy owner who is ready to take their business to the next level, you are at the right place. Let's get started. Okay, hello, welcome to this brand new episode of the Education Business Success Podcast. Today, I have a fantastic guest. I'm here with Daniel Peel, the founder and director of English Naturally.
Hello.
In the north of Spain. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited. I haven't had you as a guest for a while. I did have you once before,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
And a lot of things happened since then, I guess. Time goes fast. So thank you for joining me again. A little background on Daniel from my perspective, and then I'll let him tell us about himself. Daniel was the winner of our JUMP Member of the Year in 2023. He won the case study contest by sharing his amazing story. I met Daniel in, I think, 2020 or 2021. It was before COVID, so maybe even 2019.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I first saw Daniel in a forest with kids walking, and then with a beautiful summer camp he was running in the city of Porriño. And it really caught my attention, and that's how we connected. And since then, I've been following your journey, and I think you've really come a long way. And I envy those families that have the opportunity to learn with you and your beautiful team. And I would love for you to share a little bit about this journey with us. And yeah, so if you could tell me how the whole idea for English Naturally came when you first got started, what was the big idea?
Right. Well, before I opened English Naturally, I was working in other academies here in Spain. And what I wanted more than anything else was to veer away from what I found was the standard way of teaching English in Spain. And I wanted to bring to the children a really, at that stage I was thinking children and adults, but I wanted to bring to the students a really natural way of learning Spanish, as close to the way we learn our first language as possible. And it was sort of this big dream, and I didn't really have it figured out exactly how it was going to look or what I wanted it to look like. But I had lots of big dreams, and I knew that I didn't want to have just another academy like every other one. We opened up in the beginning of 2018, and our summer camp that year was really the first big event for us. And like you said, it was out in nature, walking by the river with the kids, doing lots of nature stuff in the environment, and just really living in English with them every day of the week through different activities.
So fantastic.
That was the big idea. Is I really wanted it to be a natural acquisition of the language rather than taught grammar structures.
Mm-hmm. So did you rent out your space directly? So like you left your job at the other school and you went straight to renting a space and working with others, or did you start by yourself?
Yeah, no, we started, it was at that stage, it was my wife and I. We have since separated, but at that stage, my wife and I opened it up. We rented our own space, and the plan was we were going to work it together as a family. And so for the first sort of 6 months, that's how it worked out. But we jumped straight in at the deep end, rented out a space, fitted it out exactly how we wanted it, bought all the materials that we wanted, and put ourselves in debt nicely.
Okay. That's how, I mean, I also started at the deep end.
Yeah.
I started with selling an apartment and spending the whole amount on the academy. Okay, so how did that work out? Like the first year, first 2 years, you started with that, then was it all like a smooth ride? Did everything work out the way you planned?
No, it didn't. Mainly because my personal life took a turn for the worst. I got divorced in that first 6 months of opening, and was separated and then subsequently divorced. And so my working relationship and my personal relationship fell apart real quickly. And I employed a teacher to replace my wife and was forced to pick up on my own, really, from there. So things didn't work out the way we'd planned when we opened. And I found myself opening my arms and accepting everybody and everyone I possibly could, taking every single student I possibly could, working every single hour I probably and possibly could, just to because I thought it was what I had to do. And at that stage, I was really in sort of overdrive on every level, trying to figure out what to do and where to go and how to do it all. And so I was really with my blinkers on. That sort of led into the first couple of years into COVID. It was blinkers on and survival mode, just serving everyone and everybody I could meet in the way really that they wanted to be served, not in the way that I wanted to or that I dreamed about doing it.
Mm-hmm. So if you compare that school that you had once you hired that teacher and the year you are talking about now, 4 or 5 years later, what would you say the biggest differences are between what you have and what you are and feel around your brand now and what it was back then?
Yeah, now we are the brand and the image, and we are teaching in the way that I dreamed of when I first arrived in Spain. Now we've COVID really stopped me in my tracks and did me a big favor actually in that respect, because I was forced to stop and rethink, and it gave me space and time to reimagine the academy. And so when we came back out of COVID, we came back reimagined and with new energy and new life. And I was lucky. My teacher at that stage was really good and really enthusiastic and full of energy and really excited about it as well. So we made lots of changes. And nowadays we teach English just the way I wanted. Like I said, it's a very natural acquisition of the language without grammar books and big lists of vocabulary to memorize and things. I'm quite happy to say that we've left that side of things to the schools, to the public system, and to some of the other academies around town who teach in that manner. So I'm really, really happy. I'm also in a position where I'm able to, or have been able to, step back and out of the classroom myself, and I finally am with my head up and running a business as opposed to blinkers on and survival mode, which was the first couple of years. You know, really head down and just trying to survive. So big change for me personally also.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how you put it, like COVID gave you space to think and all that, but I'm not sure if it was that blissful right in the middle of being in in that space. So can you tell us a little bit about how that rethinking process felt like?
I you're right, COVID, there was nothing nice about going through COVID as a small business owner with lots of bills and very little income at that sort of stage. So, you know, I can look back at it now and say COVID did me a huge favor because I managed to survive it somehow. but you know, we could have gone and closed the doors at just about any stage through those couple of years, really. We went into COVID, and within the first couple of weeks, we changed to providing classes online to as mm-hmm. many students as we possibly could. There are a number of students where we are who just couldn't because of the internet situation.
Yeah.
But we provided online classes to as many as could and wanted to during that period. And as a manager and a owner of the business, it gave me a bit of space. I think it's at that point that you and I, or I, jumped on one of your courses, to begin with, and really we got together and worked out quite a lot of what I was doing and what I didn't want to be doing, and where I wanted to be going and what I wanted to be doing. And I did an awful lot of work through the period of COVID to change the outlook of our business, and to pass that message on to our families, to, you know, and talking about what I really wanted to be doing and how I wanted to be teaching and what we were going to look like when we came out of COVID. And did a huge bit of work on conveying the message to all the people in our community, so that when we came out the other side, we came out strong and with everybody on board, and no sort of questions or dark spaces still. So it was a lot of work, and it was really hard. It was difficult. I could have shut the doors and gone out of business at any stage. I was fortunate to have financial support from a few places, and support from friends and my teacher as well. So we struggled and we fought because we knew that when we came out the other side, we wanted to do something better.
What was it that when you were at the lowest together with your teacher, what made you certain that you can come out of this and you can do something better? What was it that still kept you going?
For me, stopping was never really an option. I never really gave thought or gave much thought or opened the doors too much to the idea of quitting.
Mm-hmm.
I never imagined that COVID would have lasted as long as it did, let alone go on forever. So there was always going to be light at the end of the tunnel. It was just a matter of how long. So it was interesting in that respect. There was some really dark moments, and there were some really difficult places to battle through. But I never considered that it was going to be something I stopped doing. Mm-hmm. I was in a place where I wanted to change what I was doing, because what I'd been doing before was making me sick, and it wasn't the dream that I'd had. So I knew that I wanted to do something different, and it was the space and the freedom and the extra time that I had during COVID that allowed me to realize those things.
What exactly made you sick about the things that you did before? Like, what did the day look like?
Yeah. I mean, I was, because I'd said yes to everybody and I was trying to serve every student, I was giving adult classes in the morning most days of the week. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of days a week where I even gave company classes during the lunch hour break, because that's when they were available. And then I was teaching children in the afternoons and into the evening, and maybe even a couple of adult classes at the end of the day through to sort of 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the evening, which left my night times to run the business. And so mm-hmm. quite often I was still in the academy at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning before I went home. to look after myself, have something to eat quickly, showering, going to bed, and then get up again and do it again in the morning. So I was, when I say I was, it was making me sick, it was something that I was really just blinkers on and survival mode doing it, and adrenaline rush, keeping things going. But looking back on it, I know that if I'd kept going like that for much longer, I would have crashed and had a major breakdown at some point. Yeah.
What is something today that makes you say no to people, to those people that at that time would have received all like a yes, yes, we can do it, yes, we take you? What makes you say no today?
What makes me say no today is that today we've really, as an academy, as an education provider, we've really focused in on one group of students. Mm-hmm. And we provide that education to children aged, to school aged children, 3 through to 18. And anything outside of that is not our specialty. And so I've reached the point where I'm able to say no to people or to adults who want private one-to-one classes with me because I'm native. I'm able to say no to that because it's not our specialty, it's not in our wheelhouse, and I can refer them to somebody else who does those things.
You mean somebody else outside of the academy?
Outside of the academy, yeah, absolutely. I've kept our academy honed in single-mindedly on one market, on one group of students, so that we can put everything into that one basket and really give all our energy and all our thought and all our love to that one group of students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you feel it gives those students that you are focusing on? How is their experience different when you were covering everything, and how is it now that you are only focusing on school-aged children? How is their, what they receive, what is different there?
I think it's important. The difference now is that everything we do and everything that we say and everything that we all the messages we convey, whether it's in an email or a conversation with a parent, it's all single, with a single focus, and it's all with them in mind, and just that one group in mind. We know that there are children who, or parents who want to start with their babies earlier, and that's really fantastic, and we can point them in the right direction so they can start at that age, and then bring them on into our academy when they're three. But the conversations and the expertise that we've got and the is really focused into one group. And so the message that they get, the education that they get is specialized as opposed to being generalized.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it makes them engage more? Do you feel it makes them stay longer because they feel it's all about them? Does it help in that sense?
I would really like to think so. I believe so. I know that I feel nowadays that I have a much lower turnover of students than I had in the past. I'm much more aware of my students than I was in the past as well. And I mean, and aware on a one-to-one level, I'm much more a part of their life and they're much more a part of my life. Whereas before it was just everybody and it was very general. So I really, really would like to think that, you know, they feel that as well. And then they feel much more personalized. The service is much more personalized for them. Yeah.
I'm sure they do.
I'm pretty sure they do.
How about your pricing? I get it a lot working with academies. Yours is a brick and mortar academy. It's a physical space. You are at a certain geographical location. I get it from people that this is a small town. You can't charge any higher than what we did when we started. That's not an option. Our only way to grow is add more classes. But obviously, when you add more classes, it also adds more expenses because you need more teachers, more space. Right. How do you see the pricing topic at your location?
Yeah, I am. Pricing is a delicate issue, and it's something that for me I've found difficult in the past and even in the present. But you're absolutely right. With a physical location, you can offer more classes and you can employ more teachers, but it's a really fine balance between increasing your outgoings and increasing your incomings.
Mm-hmm.
When we reassessed everything during COVID, part of that big reassessment was reassessing our prices, and we made a considerable price increase during that period, so that when we came back out of COVID, we came back with a new focus, a new structure to our lessons and our classes, and new prices, and it was received really, really well. I think mainly, or a huge part of that was the communication.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to communicate really well with your clients, if your communication is with them at a family level and at a level that they can understand and feel a part of, then those changes, those transitions are much easier.
Did it mean that everybody stayed?
No, of course not.
And how did you handle that?
Calmly. In that respect, I think I'm quite calm at any level. At the point where I've made a decision and we're moving forward and we're growing and we're doing things that I really, truly believe in, when other people decide that we're no longer a suitable match, we're no longer the academy that they were looking for, or we're no longer offering the product or the service that they need, I'm comfortable in allowing them to move on and find the right place for them. And I think that that's a really important thing to be able to do, is to be comfortable in allowing people to move on in the knowledge that it opens up space for perhaps more students in your school who are better suited to what you do, what you're looking for. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. Whenever someone leaves, it makes room for a new dream client.
Right.
Even though we might freak out first, but then I love that calm that you are approaching it with, because that's what makes room for a new, even better fitting client.
Yeah, I'm more nervous at the decision making stage when I'm planning and deciding on increasing prices or making a dramatic change. I'm more nervous and anxious during that period. Mm-hmm. Once the decision's made and everything's and the ball's rolling and the things are put in place, the results as they come to me, I'm much more calm about those and happy to act on things as they come. Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's important.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's once it's done, it's done. And it's happening. You're
right.
Not doubting the decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we're going through this process again now, 4 years later. Mm-hmm. The last time we increased our prices, like I said, was coming out of COVID. So we're increasing our prices again in the next school year. And we're at the process of putting all of the pieces into place so that when we get to September, everyone's informed, everyone's aware, and the messaging has been delivered. And so that's a decision now that I've made. The pieces of the puzzle are in order, and they're going into place as we speak. And I'm not going to panic or worry about the result. There will be people who leave. I know there will. And there'll be people who are really happy to stay and will continue to champion us as their education provider. Yeah.
When you talk about this, I feel such a like calmness, and you are in control. Your vibe is this like it's gonna be okay. Are there ever days that it's not like that? Like you feel you're in control, you feel that it's gonna be okay, but then shit hits the fan. Things just don't work out the way you wanted. What do you do then?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have many days when and for me, usually it's a lack of maybe self-confidence. And I think it's something, or self-doubt. And I think it's something a lot of entrepreneurs will have when they're making big changes or changes, doing things that are a little bit different. But no, I give off this calm feeling, but it's hiding many days of really anxious times and many decisions that have gone backwards and forwards 100 mm-hmm. times, and many emails that have been written and then rewritten and then scrapped altogether. So to get to this place where the messaging is dealt with, the decision is done, and the pieces of the puzzles are in play, it's taken a lot of time and energy and emotional energy from my part as well. So absolutely. Those days, what do? I live through them. I think the best or the only thing I know how to do is to survive through them, knowing that it's all temporary, and that on the other side, if I even just chip away at one little thing each day, if I can even just write one email in a day, I know I've done a little bit. And I could move forward and come back to it the next day with a different energy, and attempt it again. So surviving through those moments, knowing that it's all temporary, for me is key.
Love that. Yeah. Another topic or question that I get a lot from people that are working at a certain location is the question of teachers. Team. People tend to say it's super difficult to find teachers. And I did live through that myself, although Granada is not super small, but there were 60 English schools for children when I started out. So wow. Obviously there was some kind of competition in terms of pricing, team, building a team. Your town is it 15,000 people?
About 20,000. Yeah.
Okay, so
considerably smaller.
Yeah, so there was a time when you needed new teachers, and I remember first when you found out that you will need them, you were like, "Oh my God, how are we gonna do this?" But then I remember that it was either your calm or something else that it worked out. But what do you think made it work out?
Yeah, it was an interesting one because I found out that one of my teachers was leaving. Mm-hmm. And he gave me plenty of warning. So I had months to prepare, and that was great. And I thought, yeah, of course, my first instinct was, I mean, I had a really good relationship with him, so I was really happy for him. He was moving on to new projects, and that was fantastic. But then I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I have to find someone to replace him. He's been fantastic. For a little while, I did nothing. You know, that went into that panic mode and did nothing. But when I did get into action, I calmly just put the word out on every platform I knew and in every group I had access to. And I made applications. You know, I didn't accept phone calls or random emails. It was, you know, formal applications.
Mm-hmm.
But I put it out everywhere, and knowing that something would come from somewhere and it would stick. And I was quite calm about it at that point. I had some time. I knew that if I put the word out there are enough teachers in the area, the right thing would come as a result. And I've, in my previous work, I've interviewed and employed staff on many occasions. So going through the process of going through CVs and putting a shortlist together and holding interviews and things was not really anything new for me, not a problem or an issue. And I found in the end I had whittled it down to two really good candidates, and I had them come in and even give a trial class in my academy as part of the interview process. And
yeah, I love when kids can help make the decision.
Right, exactly. You know, so I got some kids in, and I got them to come in, and I listened to their class through the crack in an open door. And it was more about listening to and getting a feeling for the energy in the classroom for me. And I know what I want from energy and from the type of classes that I want to be happening in my classroom. So that was the part of the process anyway. And so I came up with really two really good candidates. And as it turned out, the second teacher I had, after I had accepted one of these candidates and turned down the other one, my second teacher gave me very, very short notice that she wasn't going to start in the new year. And and that was more of a worry for me, because that was sort of two weeks before opening in September.
Oh.
And I was extremely fortunate that the second candidate who I had was still available and was more than happy to jump at the position. So, yeah, it was something that I, again, handled with a calm, a certain level of calm, knowing that if I did the right things and I put the right action in play, the right answers would come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they did. I was fortunate.
Sorry.
I was very fortunate. The right teachers did come, and I've got two fantastic teachers who are still with me today as a result. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you handle the situation when people, maybe it doesn't happen anymore because now the setup is that you have those teachers, but at the start you were doing classes and then you took a step back. So how do you handle that with people who might want you to do the classes? Like you mentioned, people wanted one-to-one with you. How do you help people trust your team members?
Right. We're touching on the topic of native teachers versus non-native teachers, because
a hot topic.
it's a very hot topic. I've employed two young local teachers who both have traveled and studied abroad,
mm-hmm.
and worked abroad as well. But I kind of, I didn't make it, it wasn't something I looked for, but consciously, I was very happy to make that decision and employ them, as it turned out. My conversation with parents when and if that does come up, and like you said, it doesn't come up very often nowadays. But when it has come up, when parents ask if I'm the teacher and why not, I talk to them about the teachers I have got and the education that the teachers I've chosen have got, and why I've chosen them, and explain to them as very best I can that these teachers are far better suited as teachers for their young children than I am. My training was in teaching adults, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, you know, maybe better suited for that than the, my teachers are, but they're far better suited for working with the children than I am.
Mm-hmm.
They have a much better energy, and they've also gone through the same process that these children are going through. They've gone through the same education system here in Spain. They know the system, they know the process, they know the struggles a Spanish learner has. So they've got lots of advantages above someone like myself coming in from a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all the types of conversations I have with a parent. And it's not something I look to convince a parent in. More to educate them, more to explain to them my decisions and why I've made them. And if they're happy with that, then fantastic. If they're not happy with that, if they're really looking for a native teacher, then again we're in the same position, whereas perhaps my academy is not the best option for them, and I can maybe recommend somewhere else.
Yeah, that ties into what you mentioned before, and what you just said is you're not there to convince a new family, a new client, a new parent to work with you, but it's like an invitation that they can either take on or not take and choose something else. Wow, that's such a different energy than trying to like convince everybody who comes your way to become your student.
Right. As opposed to the first couple of years where I was trying to appease everybody and be every man to everybody. This is much more about really honing in our skills on one particular area and being the best that we can in one very niche area, and inviting people to take part or to join us on our journey. Yeah.
You mentioned at some point that at the trial classes you might like sneak in or listen at the crack of the door. How do you keep track of how your teachers are doing throughout the year? Because obviously you can't be there observing them all the time. So how do you make sure that they are actually doing things the way you want, and that the students are happy, and also that the teachers are happy, because they will only stay as well if they are happy doing that job?
Right. I think that's a matter of a whole number of different management processes of keeping a track of things, having the right tools in place for the teachers to use. So I have my teachers upload their classes onto a platform where we can share all the classroom materials and their class plans. I'm physically at the academy most afternoons as well, so I'm able to hear what's going on behind the door, or I might sometimes pass through a class, as you mentioned. And it's not to spy on them, but it's that I want to be a physical energy also in the academy, more than just a boss. I want to be there as a physical energy and part of the children's learning process also. So I'm very much there to welcome children when they come and set them off as they go. So in terms of knowing how children are feeling and what their energy is like, I'm very much a part of that, and the children know me all by name, and we say hello and we high five at the door, and I'm there to support my teachers if there's any opposite energies that need dealing with as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have weekly meetings as part of the management process as well. So those are times when teachers and myself get together and talk about any issues that might be arising, talk about our dreams and our plans and what we want to be doing and what's working well and what's not and how we can support each other. So I think it's keeping track of what's going on with my teachers, with my students, and with my classes is a process of using a number of different management tools to keep under control things, and yeah, just keeping an eye on everybody and making sure everybody's energy's right. Making sure everybody's aware that I'm there for everyone if they need anything, be they students or teachers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever ask the parents about their opinion, how they see their kids do in class, whether they are happy, whether they would want to change anything?
Yeah, we. Outside of conversations which happen at the doorway, quite often if a parent has a query or something, we'll just have a conversation at the door, or I encourage myself and my teachers to take a couple of minutes out in between classes as children are coming and going to say hello to families and get to know families better, so that line of communication is always really open. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, we also run at least twice a year, I run a more formal feedback request from all my families so that they get a chance to feedback into us by answering a number of simple questions on the different areas of our business, what they like, what they don't like, or how much they like something or how much something frustrates them. And enables them to, you know, offer any ideas for how we could improve in any areas. So absolutely, getting feedback from the parents is key and something I do at least biannually to make sure that we're growing in the right direction, yeah.
Do you ever get like really like comments that make you stop and like rethink things at the academy? Has there been something like that?
No, not that I can think of. I've never had any comment that's really said to me, oh, maybe we're not on the right track here. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I really need to rethink what we're doing. No.
So it feels like families are really, they must then have a great understanding and alignment with your mission as a leader. How did you actually get there? Because you are not from their culture. They are totally different people. How do they get to the point where they are like, yes, this is what I want, and I trust him 100%. I trust his team to take the lead on my kids' education and on my kids' future, in a sense.
I think it really comes down to communication again. Being open and honest with your communication at every level. I have constantly looked to communicate our message and my dream, my big crazy dream of, you know, wanting every child to be able to speak English fluently and chase their dreams because the language is not stopping them from going places. And so I communicate that on just about every page of my website in some way, shape, or form. whether it's to do with pricing, there's something about the messaging of the dream and why we do what we do in there. Whether it's, you know, the questions and answers page, the Q&A page, there's communicated at just about every level. My dream and my vision and my mission, as well as then, of course, through newsletters and emails that go out regularly. I'm always putting in a little bit of my mission into every message I put across. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that's grown. It's certainly not something that came overnight. It's something that's grown over the course of years. And the more people who have gotten to know me have gotten to know who I am and how I think and are learning why I think that way in each message they read. But it's something that's taken time.
Yeah, and that's amazing looking at this place where you are at now from the perspective of when someone starts out with an academy. At least I remember in my journey where people were, you know, bringing in their school books and saying, why didn't you cover this in class? Or we say, there's extra help with the homework. And we were obviously an English school. And then people brought the kids math homework. I was like, oh my God, I'm doing something wrong here. There is so much more I want to say. And there's probably a better way to say it. And it took years until we got to the point where people were really aligned and where those people were the right people. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And it sometimes also took a decision where we had to say no to someone who had been with us for a while. So they were not new and we had to say no because this is not the place, but it was something that was going on. And the level of evolution we reached with the school no longer admitted that type of attitude or...
Right.
Yeah. Did that ever happen to you that you had to cut it with someone who had been with you for a while?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a number of... I've had to let go of a number of students or classes along the road because they no longer suited my vision or my... Mm-hmm. My mission as I narrowed it down into a really focused vision. Like you said, I had one particular student who had been with me since the day I started, and she would come in and I would give her one-to-one classes with her homework. And it might be maths and it might be science, and I have no idea, but I was giving her help with her homework because she went to a British school. And her parents couldn't speak English, so mm-hmm. they couldn't help her with her homework. And so that was something I had agreed to do in the early days, but at some stage I had to turn around and say, "Hey, listen, this is no longer serving my purpose, and it's no longer serving the interest of the students who I really want to be serving." So, so that sort of thing happens. And more recently, we had to let go or say no to a family who were very much focused on she was very, the mother was very much focused on her daughter preparing for a Cambridge examination at the cost of our scheduling, at the cost of her other classes, at the cost of the way in which we believed was the right way to prepare for an exam and the right way to learn the language. And it was a difficult one because they'd been with us for a long time also. And at the end of the day, I had to have a very difficult conversation with the mother to let her know that I think that maybe we were not going to be able to provide her with what she was looking for.
Yeah. Okay. In the end, I think these situations, even though they might be difficult, maybe even painful at times, they definitely contribute to the calm that you are generally feeling. Because if these people stay, their struggle continues because they still won't be happy enough.
Right.
So, and then
right.
for you, it keeps the struggle on. So it's mutual.
Right.
I think they are probably now at the place which they love, which is different. And you
yeah.
probably
well, I hope so. You know, I genuinely hope that they've found someone to coach their daughter through the exam in the way that they need, the way that suited their lifestyle and their schedules. It wasn't going to be us, because like you said, it would have created friction within the team, my team, within my academy, and that would have left them feeling uncomfortable as well. So
sometimes we hold on to people and we don't realize that we don't just create further compromises for ourselves, but for the whole group that might need to tweak their schedule, do something different in class. So we actually take advantage of other people's patience as well in our community to please just one person or one family that's
right.
not even a right match. So
right.
Gotta be careful about that.
Okay. Yeah, right.
How do you get new students? Do you still need any new students, or are you like full and waitlist and no more places left, or do you still need to get new students?
I have to say that for the first time I'm this course, we are nearly full. We have a small wait list. We have a few people on a list who can't fit in because we don't have space. And for the first time really since opening, I'm at that place where we're just about full. Again, it's taken time. It's taken some years. It's taken some patience and a lot of tears. our students, the vast majority of our students come as a result of having spoken to an existing student or being friends with the family of an existing student. And so almost all, I'd like to say 90% of our new students come as a referral from one of our current students, as word of mouth.
Do you have like a specific referral system? Do you reward it in any way, or do they do it anyway? Just bring people.
I'd love to say they do it anyway, but I do actually refer. Have a referral system. I do reward them with 1 month free for referring a friend, if as long as their friend has been with us. You know, for 3 months and as an ongoing student, then I reward them with a free month, the referring family.
So,
yeah, I have I've had this referral program for a number of years now. The families really appreciate it and enjoy it, and it's something I'll continue. Even though I'm full, it's something I'll continue for at least the next year, depending on how we go. If we are full again next year and we have more on our waiting list, then it might be something that I can afford to stop. I'll just have to play that by ear a little bit as we go.
Wow. What is it, how would you describe a day of yours? Because when you started out, you said it was like teaching, trying to figure out the different messages to all those different groups or crowds that you were working with. Now that you have a business focused on one audience, now that you, I understand you don't teach classes, or you teach maybe very few, you don't, then what do you do in a day besides high-fiving the students?
Well, it's a very important part of my day. I I really enjoy welcoming the students as they arrive and saying goodbye to them as they go.
It's beautiful.
and saying hello to the families as they pick up their kids. I enjoy that they know me by name and that I know many of them by name. I have to say, with the number of students I've got, I don't know them all by name yet, but it's a nice part of the day. I've reached a space where now my mornings are free for me and other projects. Usually in the morning I'm at home or working on something else. Whether it's free time with my partner or organizing other things. And in the afternoons, I have one afternoon where I do teach classes still. I've held on to one family, or a group of families actually, who I give classes to.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other days of the week, I have my time free to dedicate to the business and to running the business and to strategizing my business and to growing my business and to shaping it the way I want to shape it. Concentrating my energies on the messaging and what I'm saying to my families and to my community. Yeah. It's a much different place for me to be in than it was when I started out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get to actually run and manage my business now, as opposed to run around like a headless chook within it, trying to be everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. How did your private life change as a result of those changes you made in the business?
Well, I have time for a private life. I think that's the big change. Yeah.
Yeah.
It changed dramatically for me because, like I mentioned early on, I went through a separation and a divorce at the very beginning of this business. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in a new relationship now. I have shared custody of my children now. So this was not something I was able to do at the beginning. I didn't have the time, space, mentally or physically to look after my children, spend time with my children, or even consider social life or partner. So now I have time for that. Like I said, I have my mornings are free, and I have time for my partner and I to go and do things and work on other projects together. And I have time to look after my children every second week, which is fantastic. It's given me my life back a little bit. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And I'm so happy for your kids that they have their dad back.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the most important reasons why it's worth going through all those sometimes painful changes, right?
Absolutely. Those changes were really key and really important. And I knew from right at the beginning I somehow had to work it out and make the changes. It was just a case of going through the shock system and getting there.
Who do you share your worries, your successes with? Like, do you have a local circle where people get you, people understand you? Who do you turn to when you are feeling like you know, this entrepreneur journey is sometimes really lonely. What do you do when you need to talk to someone?
Yeah. I'm really fortunate. My partner is really supportive of all my crazy ideas.
That's a great thing. Right?
Yeah. So I use her as a sounding board for everything, which is wonderful. But I have your tribe to share my worries or my ideas or my new projects with. As you said, as an entrepreneur, it's good to have a group somewhere that's outside of your family, that's independent of you and your family, so that you can get real and honest feedback from them. And people who, like you said, people who get you, people who are on a similar journey, perhaps, as entrepreneurs, who get where you're at, what it feels like. So I have your tribe. Who support me immensely. Yeah.
What would you say to someone who thinks that there is no way that they would have things in common with others, their issues as a director or founder of a school, whether physical or online, are so specific to their to where they are at, that no one would get it, and they just have to figure it out by themselves?
I'd say it's an easy place to get to. I'd say I feel like that at times. Like sure, no one understands me. I'm just going to have to figure this out. Lots of the things that they're going through are completely unique to them, absolutely. But in our world of small business owners and directors, we're all going through very similar battles. We've all got very similar challenges, at a different level, in a different way, absolutely. But I think it's really important to know that other people are going through or have been through what you're going through, and having a support network or having a network that you can share your worries or your wins or your doubts with is vital. I think it would be a mistake to think that you can do everything yourself and then you have all the answers.
Yeah. Although at times it is also necessary to like be just by ourselves and listen to ourselves. Do you ever take time for yourself when your team is not there, when your partner, when it's not your partner you are talking to, when it's not us in the community? Does it ever happen that you take time away by yourself?
Yeah, I think that's important also. And I think it's sometimes more difficult than the opposite. Sometimes it's more difficult to take time away from the world or from everybody, and either just detox from everything to give yourself then some space to refresh, reboot, or give yourself some isolation so that you can really focus and hone in on the situation at hand, whatever it is you're working on or dealing with. And I know that if I'm working on a project, then there are times when I just have to do it on my own, and I have to shut the door, and I have to get myself some space and peace and quiet so that I can really hone in on what I want to say or what I want to get done. So yeah, absolutely, those times are needed. I think around this time last year, February last year, I took a couple of weeks out as a complete detox, and I turned my mobile phone off and I turned everything off, and I walked away for a while. And I think it was the first time I'd done that ever. And it was quite an enlightening experience, and I think something that I'll repeat maybe yearly if I can convince myself.
Even mobile free. Wow.
Yeah, I turned my mobile off for a couple of weeks. I reached a space where I was overloaded with everything. And I'm fortunate enough that that my school will run without me if I've put things the right things in place and I've got things organized. That the teachers can look after things for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
That's truly amazing that you can do that. And I'm pretty sure when you started out this whole work, even after a few years of running the school, there was no such option. So congratulations on actually getting this whole story there.
No such option, but also not even something I imagined having or getting to a place where I could do such a thing. I never even considered that might be somewhere I'd be. I always thought that I'd be in the middle of it and everything would revolve around me. And I've learned the hard way that's not very healthy, and it's probably not the best way to do things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Totally do. How do you just mentioned you thought everything should revolve around you. From an ego perspective, how do you give space to your teachers to represent your school? Was that ever a question for you? Not towards the parents, but were you ever afraid that you would lose something if you gave too much like light to the teachers? Was that ever something that made you worried?
Sure, and to a certain degree still does. I give my teachers space to write their own blog posts and mm-hmm. to be very, very at the front of things in that respect in terms of messaging that goes out. So there is still a certain part of me that's anxious about that, about losing my voice. Because I feel that my voice is very much an important part of my business and the brand and who we are. So absolutely, it's something that is difficult. But I think if it's done the right way, if those tasks and those responsibilities are passed on to the right people and in the right way, then you can feel more and more relaxed about being able to do it, knowing that the right messages will still be passed on.
Yeah, and I think it's also a question of understanding how much letting that person take up some space and show their what they have, share what they know, what they have. Yeah. How much it actually contributes, because maybe sometimes we are holding on to things, but we are not even doing them. Because, for right. example, like I don't let anybody else write my blog post, but then I never write the blog post because I don't have the time for it. So it's realizing that the actual contribution is way more beneficial than what we might lose on maybe not being the protagonist 100%.
Right, exactly. And that's actually the place where I got myself to almost, that I'd run out of inspiration or ideas to write about, and I'd gone a couple of months without writing a new blog post, and I was all tied up in knots because I wasn't doing it, and yet I couldn't pass it on. And so, yeah, that was... Mm-hmm. That was pretty much where I got to before I decided, no, this is something I can pass on. because I've got the right people around me, and I can sit back from it a little bit and take a seat back and read the posts as they go out, and just manage the voice as it goes, rather than always having to deliver everything. Yeah.
Beautiful. Where do you see yourself and your school in 3 years, 5 years time?
I'd love to have a multi-location school. I'd love to have a multi-location school in the local towns around where I am at the moment. And so that, because I have a number of towns within 15 minutes drive of where I am, and I can see the space where perhaps I have a small group of schools within 20 minutes of each other, in which the students can access classes and projects and things that are going on within each and any of the schools, in a similar way to might be maybe a gym membership in a particular chain of gyms, which would enable you to access any of the gyms in that chain. So I don't know that that's the next 3 years, but I'd like to think that I can put my feet out on that journey within the next 3 years. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I have no single doubt. That's definitely my vibe, like different locations. I can go anywhere and do the classes. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What would your advice be to someone who might be at the very start of this journey, or maybe they have already started, but now they are in that swamp where they are just feeling like they are sinking, and there is no real hope. They don't see the light in the end of the tunnel. What would you advise them?
I think it's important to know that everything is temporary, and that there is light at the end of the tunnel if you want there to be. If you really want there to be. And I would say absolutely find yourself a good group of people to work with, whether that's your team of teachers or a support group like you have there at Jump, Esther. Find yourself a group of like-minded people running businesses similar to yours, that you can talk to and share ideas with and share doubts with and share, because otherwise it will become a very lonely, very tiring, very difficult journey.
Absolutely. So you think it's down to a choice, that at some point we can choose to get out of that?
I think we have to choose. I think you can't leave everything up to luck. You can't. You have to choose to take it. You have to choose to take action on things. And like I said, I think I was fortunate that COVID stopped me in my tracks and forced me to lift my head up above the water and see where I was and see where I wanted to be. Maybe everyone else or maybe other people won't have that. Such a shock force that stops them in their tracks. But stopping in your tracks and taking stock of where you are and what you're doing is important, so that you can refocus on where you actually want to go. Yeah. Yeah. Not losing sight of where you want to go, I think is important.
Actually, having an idea.
Right, yeah, okay. First having an idea, having an idea of where you want to go, and then making sure you don't lose sight of it and that you're taking small actions, taking small action in that direction on a daily basis. Yeah. Mm. But it's a choice. Absolutely.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And I'm at a point with this, whether it's a choice or not, that even if it's not true, for me, it has been working, so I don't care if it's true or not. So to me, it's definitely about choices and
right. And
also giving ourselves grace when our choices are not that great.
Yep.
Because I like to think that I made that choice because I didn't know better. And now I do.
Right.
And I focus on that.
Right. Or I made that choice because it felt like the right thing at that time. And you know what? In hindsight, maybe it wasn't. But at that time, when I made the choice, it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Giving yourself space and grace to make the wrong decision or to make mistakes is important. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Without that, we wouldn't be learning. Although it's also nice to learn from other people's mistakes. That's why I love to share all mine so people can pick those up.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Daniel. I'm truly impressed, and I have seen much of this journey, but seeing you in this place where you are now, it makes me even emotional and so, so happy for you and your students. And I really trust that more and more people will find you, and that second or third or fourth, I don't know how many locations you will have in that chain, is soon becoming reality. Where can people find you if someone after listening to this is like, oh, I really want to check it out, or if they are in your area and they want to see whether their kids could learn with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, sure. Best place to start would be our website at englishnaturally.es, where they can find lots of information about us, how we work, why we work the way we do. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at English Naturally also. Yeah.
We're going to put that into the show notes as well.
Okay, fantastic.
Is there something, Daniel, that I haven't touched on and you feel like, oh, you really want to share that?
I don't know. I think maybe sitting here talking to you, you know, I feel quite calm, and you've mentioned a couple of times how I look calm and how I've gone through some major changes in a calm way. I'd hate for people to think that my life has been calm and tranquil on this journey, because it's been anything but. It's been 5 years that have been hard fought, and every year has had battles and big stresses and highs and big lows. And I think it's part of the journey, and I think it's part of what makes us tough, and part of success is having fought really tough battles. So I'd hate for people to think that we are where we are today because it's just been a gentle cruise for us. Yeah.
No, I think you made it very clear, and thank you so much for sharing so honestly and openly, because I think that's key, that people see the dark side as well.
Right.
Because there is definitely one.
Right. I think that's a key piece of my communication and all my communications, is that really simple and clean honesty, just being open and clear about absolutely everything, enables people to read you and feel much more confident with you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with that.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Danielle. And thanks everyone for listening. I hope you found this episode valuable. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been great, and thanks for having me.